You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
708-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. The Confident Retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com. Mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Well, good afternoon. Today is Friday, another Friday. Is it really the 18th of September? Wow. In any event, I'm Pat Smits, the program It's the Law, but I'd like to tell you about our beautiful weather. I hope you've had an opportunity to get outside, because it has just been a gorgeous day. And tonight should be mostly clear, maybe then some patchy fog. Early tomorrow morning, again, patchy fog, but then sunny. It should be a beautiful sunny day tomorrow, temperature around 84 degrees. We're done with the humidity, but yet it's warm enough to still be summer. And again, on Sunday, it should be mostly sunny. About 75 degrees, so it's going to cool off a little bit. And then Monday, again, mostly sunny and a high of about 70 degrees. So I know there is the St. Patrick's Day celebration in Clinton this weekend, and you're probably saying, wait a minute, it's September, but this is the half year. And I know there's something going on in Clinton tonight at the Art Museum. And there's obviously something going on in Flemington, either tonight or tomorrow, the Jazz Festival. And if you're out there and need to go down Main Street, don't try it. And they're also working, if you're coming in and trying to cut around the back way, they're working around Walter Ferrand Boulevard. So it's just been kind of fun. And, of course, this is Friday and school year, so all the buses are out there. But in any event, I'm here, and the program is It's the Law, and we'll be back after we just tell you about one of our other sponsors, and then I'm going to talk about some of the things in the news and perhaps mention a little bit about the debates. But be right back.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntertonChamberRadio.com app today.
Okay, we're back, and I wanted to make a couple comments. And if any of you heard the, not the Republican debates, but Mr. Trump went to New Hampshire and spoke to, I guess they called it a town meeting, and took a question. Obviously, he tried to laugh it off, meaning that he really was not serious when he made the first comment, but he really does need to think about how he's going to respond to crazies, because the comment was incredibly negative, incredibly prejudicial against Muslims. And how do we make everyone feel welcomed in this country? I'm sure that many of our ancestors, if you have stories going way back, I know that some of my Irish ancestors were not welcomed in this country. And I certainly, I worked among, on the Navajo Reservation and saw the kinds of prejudice against many of our first Americans. So that if you have friends who are Muslim or know any Muslims, have neighbors, or, you know, let's all just let people know that this is terribly inappropriate. And what it reminded me of is how different the same kind of bigotry was handled by John McCain during his presidential bid. And the comments at that time were against our then aspiring president, Barack Obama. And just John McCain was masterful in being able to shut down people like that, shaking his head, not listening to it. And he was just, he was what made me proud. And whether or not you supported John McCain, certainly you knew that if he became the president of the United States, he would be inclusive, and he understood that this is just not what we want in our country. So in any event, and I know the other thing that is personally bothering me, in one sense because I'm an attorney, but in another sense because I had a child born in another country. And of course, what Mr. Trump is trying to do is say that children born in this country, if their parents are illegal immigrants or illegal, not here, properly not here, these children should not be citizens of the United States based on their birth. Now, one of the misconceptions is that often these children are a way for the parents to become citizens. And actually, I know of more cases where the children, the U.S. citizen children, are deported with their parents when their parents are deported. And I'm not saying that this is any easy solution, but to think about the fact that some people born in this country who might live here for their entire lives would not be legal just because they couldn't prove the legal status of their parents is really, to me, appalling. And it also would create many, many more problems that we don't even think about. For example, when our daughter was born in Guatemala, it meant that, and she's our natural child, but it meant that she was automatically a Guatemalan citizen, and she had a right, and by birth, actually, was also a U.S. citizen, because both my husband and I were U.S. citizens at the time. So you can imagine how many problems there might be if different countries had different laws about whether or not someone's a citizen at birth. Because what if either my husband and I were not U.S. citizens or citizens of other countries? And, you know, sometimes you would have children who would be, if they weren't born and would not be a citizen of the country where they were born, they might not be able to be citizens of any country. And I guess we see that so many of our ancestors came here, may have had difficulties, but were finally welcomed. And it's so hard for me, especially, to see how we're treating certain peoples who are really coming here to make a better life for themselves and their children. And many, many of them are really escaping persecution. And that is one thing that we tend to overlook here, is the number of people who really come here from especially the Latin American countries, the Central American countries. I know the last time I was back in Guatemala, we went to the little village where we had lived in Comalapa, and we went to visit a very elderly man who had been very helpful to us when we lived in that community. And he told us about two of his sons, who were disappeared. In other words, the government killed two of his sons during this terrible time in Guatemala. And I could only think at that, if they had only been able to escape and come to the United States during that time. Now, I also know, however, that many of the illegals who came here, or many of the people from Guatemala who came here to escape that very persecution, if they were apprehended, they were sent back to Guatemala. So they had little or no chance of being able to stay here because they were here because of persecution in their own country. And they were treated very differently than people coming from the Iron Curtain countries because it was very easy somehow for people to assume that that was why people from some of the countries like Hungary and Poland and Russia were coming here. And I'm not saying they weren't, but it was just that there was seemed to be a different standard. Well, the other thing I thought I'd talk about, because there is, seems to be a real misunderstanding of some of what has been part of our Immigration and Nationality Act. And this is going back to 1952. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of this so you can understand, if anyone is interested, in how our immigration laws have in fact evolved and what's happened in the Immigration Act of 1952 was in fact and remains the cornerstone of United States immigration law. So I'll be back after a short break, and we'll talk about that for a few minutes and then talk about some of the other legal news.
This is Chris Phelan, president of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, and I'd like to congratulate our Leadership Hunterdon Class of 2015 for all of their success and accomplishments. Amy Anderson, Genia Versa, Joni Cafaro, Colleen Doerr, Carmel Gettings, Richard Hall, Michelle Cavanaugh, Elizabeth Lowe, Leslie Perica, and Dolores Van Pelt. They have truly accomplished much over these last 9 months. I encourage you to visit the Chamber's website, hunterdonchamber.org, and read their white paper. Their white paper will contribute greatly to the future economic growth here in Hunterdon County. Also, please feel free to visit the Hunterdon Chamber's YouTube page, and there you will see a great video encapsulating all of their accomplishments, all of their growth, and the continued success, the real impact of Leadership Hunterdon here in Hunterdon County.
Okay, I'm talking today a little bit about the 1952 Immigration and Nationality Act. It's found, if anyone's interested, at 8 USCA. Section is 1101 through 1537. And as I said, this remains the cornerstone of United States immigration law. Now, in 1990, Congress amended the INA, and that's the Immigration and Nationality Act, the INA, to include protections for abused, neglected, or abandoned children who, with their families, illegally entered the United States. And the in accordance with that statute, as added by Public Law 101 to 649, Section 153, an undocumented minor immigrant is eligible for classification as a special immigrant juvenile, which would afford him or her relief from deportation and the opportunity to apply for lawful permanent residency. So this has been part of our law since 1990. Now, this, and it's called, it's sometimes called the SIJ scheme, where it is, because it's special immigrant juvenile, so special immigrant juvenile, SIJ. And it's since been amended several times, and perhaps some of you have heard about the most recent amendment in 2008, and that was when Congress enacted what's called the TVPRA, and that is an amendment the amendments implemented by that were intended to expand the special immigrant juvenile classification to include protections for minor victims of human trafficking. Now, human trafficking, and, you know, is that really a problem? All you need to do is speak with anyone who works for the formerly DIFAS, or Division of Child Protection, and especially New York, New Jersey, East Coast, and they will, most of them, have encountered this problem. They're getting education in this kind of a situation because, unfortunately, there really is pretty incredible how much of this is actually going on. But in any event, the most recent amendments liberalize the requirements for a special immigrant juvenile status, and it did so by eliminating the requirement that the child be eligible for long-term foster care. Now, this inserted language requiring the child not to be able to reunify with one or both parents because of abuse, neglect, abandonment, or a similar basis under state law. So this is why it actually became an issue both in the federal courts and in the state courts. And that was why there is in New Jersey and other states issues, and these issues come up before the state courts because the statute, the federal statute, defines a special immigrant juvenile as a juvenile who has been declared dependent on a juvenile court located in the United States, or whom such a court has legally committed to or placed under the custody of an agency or department of the state. Also, it could be an individual or entity appointed by the state or juvenile court located in the United States, and also the juvenile whose reunification with one or both of the immigrant's parents is not viable due to abuse, neglect, abandonment, or a similar basis found under state law. So this is where the state law comes into play in order to make that finding that there is a special immigrant juvenile status. Now, when it has been determined in the proceedings, and it could be administrative, but it's usually judicial, that it would not be in the child alien's best interest to be returned to the alien or the parent's previous country of nationality or of last habitual residence. So that has to be the findings. It has to be a determination. And so the process for obtaining this special immigrant juvenile status is rather unique because it's a unique hybrid, and meaning that the procedure that directs both the state and federal systems to work together. And there are a number of cases that talk about this and decide this. And in fact, there is a recent case in New Jersey. But these cases explain that this special immigrant juvenile status creates a special circumstance where a state juvenile court is charged with addressing an issue relevant only to federal immigration law. So that's what's so unusual about it. This is not the type of case that originates in the federal courts, because we're talking about a state court who has to declare the child who is a dependent on the state, and when I'm saying juvenile court, it's the state juvenile court. And so this is why this is a rather unique situation. So what happens is the child or another individual acting on the child's behalf must first petition for an order from a state juvenile court, and they need the order from a state juvenile court to make findings that the juvenile satisfies certain criteria, and that criteria would be set forth that would mean that, in fact, the juvenile court must make a number of findings, including the following. First of all, that the juvenile is under the age of 21 and is unmarried. So this is not something where once a child reaches the age of 18, he or she is no longer eligible. However, if they get married at age 17, that changes it. And so the juvenile has to also be dependent on the court or have been placed under the custody of an agency or an individual appointed by the court. So in this case, that generally is pretty easy to get these first two prongs. Now, of course, the juvenile court also has to have jurisdiction under the state law to make judicial determinations about the custody and care of juveniles. So actually, when we talk about juvenile court, in New Jersey, we have the family court, the family part, and the judges in the family part handle juvenile matters. They handle family matters. They handle matters of abuse, neglect, also handle any issues that arise between unmarried people who have children together, and of course handle the domestic violence cases. So the fourth thing that the court needs to do is needs to find that reunification with one or both of the juvenile's parents is not viable. And it can't be, the criteria is it's not viable due to abuse, neglect, or abandonment. Now that it doesn't end there, or similar basis under state law. So that this is a very open-ended statute with respect to the findings, and the findings in one state could be different in the same case, could be different than the findings in a court in another state. And that goes back to the fact that state courts might take a look at the very same situation and make different findings of fact. But in any event, that has to be the court's finding. And also, it has to find, the court has to find that it is not in the best interest of the juvenile to be returned to his parents' previous country of nationality or country of last habitual residence within the meaning of the statute. Now, when you said, well, last habitual residence, well, it's not unusual, for example, and I'm more familiar with Latin America, but it certainly wouldn't be unusual, perhaps, for somebody from El Salvador or Guatemala or Nicaragua to travel up through Mexico and stay in Mexico for a couple years or a few years, and that would be their country of last habitual residence, so that they may have even planned on staying there permanently, and then something happened and they come to this country. So all of these findings have been upheld in the courts, and there's one particular case that, you know, really spelled out in detail. And of course, what we have to remember, by making these preliminary factual findings, the juvenile court is not rendering an immigration determination. So all the state court is doing is determining these factors, and that would be the best place to do it because these judges are regularly handling these kinds of cases, meaning the state court judges are regularly handling these kinds of cases, the family part judges. So that the state court means that what they need is a predicate order. And that's merely a prerequisite that must be fulfilled before a juvenile can submit an application for a special immigrant juvenile status. So that you can't even make that application until the state court has made its determination. Now, then if once the state court makes the findings, then the juvenile can submit the application to the USCIS, and it's a form, it's a petition, a regular petition, an I-360 petition. And then if it's approved, you know, if the juvenile's I-360 status is approved, then he or she will be granted special immigrant juvenile status. So at that point, if a child does in fact obtain the special immigrant juvenile status, then the child is permitted to apply for adjustment of status. Now, this is another way that people, another, I don't know, I guess I could say hurdle, but people do have to go through that's not the end of the procedure. In other words, once the juvenile has the special immigrant juvenile status, then they have to go through the process of applying for an adjustment of status under the federal law. And that's really, in effect, they have to obtain legal permanent residency. And so that is the first step, of course, before someone can obtain U.S. citizenship, except for all of us who were born here, and we don't have to worry about it, including children of illegal immigrants at this point. So anyone at this point, you know, born in this country is in fact able to, has U.S. citizenship. Now, I kind of almost laugh when I hear the Donald, because you would think, listening to him, every woman walks across the Mexican border when she's 2 days before she is ready to deliver a baby, so she can have her baby here in the United States. Now, I recognize that there are a lot of problems in some of the border states. That, you know, we understand that this can be a problem. However, it's probably many, many more babies born here of illegal immigrants are born to people who have been here for many, many years, and not just walking over to take advantage of having a child born in the United States. Although, honestly, I think most of us, if we really thought about it, if we had that option, and we knew, you know, what's going on in the United States compared to certain other countries, we would jump at the chance of coming in to have our child born here. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's something that we should be proud of, that, you know, people are beating the doors down to get in, not the other way around. But anyway, eventually a child with the special immigrant juvenile status would be permitted to apply and obtain legal permanent residency and eventually U.S. citizenship. Now, the statute itself does permit the special immigrant juveniles to circumvent various admissibility requirements that might otherwise prevent them from obtaining permanent residency. So what do I mean by that? What are examples? Well, an SIJ is not required to demonstrate that he or she is unlikely to become a public charge, or that he or she did not come to the United States for the purpose of performing unskilled labor. Now, that's one of the problems that most people run into, or certainly the uneducated people coming into the country. You know, they can't prove that. And one of the things that everybody has to realize is, don't be too quick to sponsor someone, because if you sponsor someone, you're basically on the hook for 10 years. And this has come up a number of times in my cases. I'm assuming that most people know that I'm an attorney. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County, and my practice is family law. Well, it's not unusual for someone to marry outside of this country, or have a fiancé outside of the country, or even a mail order bride. And then when they sponsor this person to come into the United States, the sponsor has to be willing to say that he or she will pay what is necessary to maintain that person. In other words, that they have to be willing to support the person for 10 years. So that's a pretty big commitment. And I've certainly seen more than once where that commitment is made, usually by a man to a woman, and then suddenly, you know, the divorce. And of course, she has the right not only under state law, because she might not have any right to alimony under state law, but she certainly will have the rights under this provision, which is that you have to, when you're applying, you have to sponsor some, if when you're applying, you're sponsored, your sponsor has to commit to supporting you. So what I'm saying is the SIJs do not need that. They don't have that requirement. They also are not required even to demonstrate that they could become a public charge. They certainly don't have to say that they didn't come to the United States for the purpose of performing unskilled labor. So they also are not prevented from obtaining legal permanent resident status because they'd entered into the country without inspection and do not hold an unexpired immigrant visa or other valid entry document, or they've accrued more than 180 days of unlawful presence in the United States. All of these things are bars to someone else obtaining legal permanent resident status. And of course, the inspection is interesting because if you have had a child born outside of the United States, as we did, it was very interesting, the inspection that she had to go through. And I think I've probably mentioned this before in the program, but it took them longer to inspect our child than it took for our dog to get through immigration. So it was what's priorities, I guess. But even years ago, they were very thorough in making sure that this little child was our child. And of course, what we had done to get her out of Guatemala, she had a Guatemalan passport, and to get her into the United States, she had a U.S. passport. And she still has this Guatemalan passport that's legal size with, you know, scrolls and flourishes and very, very interesting, her birth certificate, especially when she's told she has to bring it somewhere. But anyway, there was a recent case in New Jersey, and the justice who wrote the opinion was actually not a justice. She was temporarily assigned from the appellate division, and the case was decided on August 26th, and it was Judge Cuff, who's from the appellate division, and she wrote the decision for a unanimous court. So there wasn't any disagreement on this. All of the judges agreed on what should happen. But it is a rather interesting case to read, if you're a case junkie, I guess. But it talks about, the family court's factual findings and how that's presented and when, and, that the United States courts make a much broader inquiry than the state courts have to, and because the federal courts are making the ultimate decision as to whether or not the juvenile's application should be granted. Therefore, the findings made by the state court only relate to matters of child welfare. That's important to know. This is really a child welfare statute and situation. And the all the immigration decisions remain in the hands of the immigration court. Or I should say not a court, it's an agency. And they're charged with administering the INA. So what there, as I said, there are different agencies that fall under this umbrella and are charged with administering immigration benefits. And the arrangement in the federal level comports with the well-established rule that power to regulate immigration is unquestionably exclusively a federal power. So that's why a judge who heard one of these cases would not be able to make any ultimate decisions with respect to whether or not the juvenile would be granted residency or granted the special status. They can only, the people who are dealing with these cases, meaning the judges who are dealing with these cases in state court, their powers are very limited. But in fact, they do have certain things that they need to decide. Well, in talking about deciding, I think I'm going to take a little shot of water, and we'll be back after just a couple spots from our sponsor and sponsors, and certainly hope that you not only use their products and services, but, you know, make mention sometime if you're a chamber member, because, of course, much of our funding comes from our, I guess I could say, our corporate people, not inside, but the corporate people who help us and who raise money and who donate. So as I said, we'll be back shortly.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325. You've got a
friend. Well, that was very quick. Let me play something else.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Well, I'm back. I'm Pat Smith, and we're talking a little bit about special immigrant juvenile status and the law and how that works into both the federal courts and the state courts. And before I continue, I just wanted to remind all of the chamber members that there's a card club at Hopewell Valley Community Bank. I understand they've been bought out, but in any event, it's Tuesday, September 29th. From 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at 56 Main Street in Flemington. And it's open to members of the Hunterdon County Chamber. And probably there's another business group that it's also open to. But in any event, if you're a chamber member, please think of doing that. And then the there's another announcement that there's an annual awards for Chamber Awards for 2015. And there's a nomination form if you feel like you'd like to nominate anyone. And there are the following categories. One is Entrepreneur of the Year. Second is Most Promising New Business in 2015. Third, Good Neighbor. Fourth, Women's Business and Community Leader. Next is Tell Me More Award, Most Informative Chamber Radio Show. So that's going to be an award for the most informative chamber radio show. And then there's also a Fresh Talk Award for a new favorite chamber radio host who's been on the air for 12 to 24 months. And that, of course, excludes all of us who started out with the chamber, because I think we're going on 3 years. But if you are interested in nominating anyone for these awards, you're invited to nominate an individual whom you feel has made an impact in business leadership and contributed extraordinarily to the vitality of business in our county. And you check which, I should not who, but which category you want to nominate, and then provide all of the information, including your name. And to be accepted, there's a lot of information that has to be filled out about the person, the major career accomplishments, the business and community leadership role, especially qualifications and for which you're actually nominating the person, whether it's most promising new business, entrepreneur of the year, or some of these other categories. And then professional and personal character, two examples of how the nominee distinguished him or herself as having outstanding professional and personal character. And of course, then anything else you want to write. I'm not sure they want 20 pages, but in any event, this is a very nice award ceremony that's put on yearly, and it's going to be at the annual awards breakfast on November 24th, and that's at 8 a.m. I'm trying to remember where the breakfast is. I'll probably remember it on my way home. But in any event, think of nominating. You can pick up the blank nominating sheets here at the chamber, or probably if you called, they might even fax a copy to you. So we're back, and what has been determined in New Jersey is that the family part, this is the as I indicated, this is the court in New Jersey that makes decisions on the variety of things we've talked about as far as divorce, separation, custody, parenting time, domestic violence, etc. Now, the courts in New Jersey in the family part have to make separate findings as to abuse, neglect, and abandonment with regard to both legal parents of an alien juvenile. You know, for example, in the family part, the judge first has to determine whether reunification with one of the child's parents is not viable due to abuse, neglect, or abandonment. So, however, regardless of the outcome of that analysis, the court should next conduct the same analysis with regard to the child's other legal parent. So, if the child is here with the, you know, let's say the wife's sister, and there has to be determination as to whether or not, I shouldn't say the wife's sister, I should say the child's mother, then there has to be determination whether or not she's abused, neglected, or abandoned the child. Now, however, the family part, as I said, they have to make findings with respect to both parents. In other words, not just one, but both parents. And that's because they need to ensure that the federal courts will have sufficient information when they're trying to apply this actual federal statute. Now, it's also discussion about the role of Congress, and they envisioned for juveniles and juvenile courts, and excuse me, and the juvenile courts of the 50 states. And because the role of Congress envisioned for the juvenile courts in our 50 states that role, that the process should be handled that way, and so that the state courts make the determinations whether someone is eligible. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. The state courts make the determination whether the child has been abused or neglected, and then their decision is carried over to the federal courts to keep going up the ladder with decisions that have to be made in order to have someone come into this country legally. And if it's a juvenile, that's the issue. And one of the things that I have learned is that there are just many people who come into this country, especially I've met a number in California where they come into California, they leave all of their possessions. They, you know, just often it's mothers who come because they were able to find work as nannies. So that, you know, but at this point, the person, that alien, the juvenile, you know, has to, in fact, be the finding. I'm struggling here a little bit, but the finding has to be that the juvenile was abused or neglected or abandoned. So, well, and if you know any cases that it really is important to understand whether or not a child may be eligible for SIJ status. And because a parent cannot apply or a child cannot apply for classification without a court order from a juvenile court. So that the other thing we need to let juvenile courts know and the judges know, that should there, you know, even providing a qualifying order does not grant SIJ status or grant a green card. I mean, many people, you'll hear that, I'm waiting for my green card, or my green card just came, or I don't have a green card. Well, anyone who has a green card who's in this country has a right to citizenship. They just have to go through a longer process. But at least I don't know of anything that would bar someone from going through the process for citizenship in those circumstances. Now, however, the courts in New Jersey have found that nothing in the federal statute or the regulation indicates that Congress intended that the state juvenile courts pre-screen potential SIJ applicants for possible abuse. So the juvenile courts, their role is vital, but it is somewhat limited. And why don't we, we're getting close to the cutoff time, so I am going to bring you a little more information from our sponsors, because we wouldn't be here without them.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, back, talking about, as I said, the special immigrant juvenile status. Certainly anyone who thinks they know a juvenile who might be able to become legalized based on this should, in fact, contact, an attorney, their volunteer here, volunteer attorneys here in Hunterdon, if people cannot afford it. I'm not sure whether the legal services program here in Hunterdon handles these kinds of cases, but it's certainly worth it to, find out and develop a program. And talking about programs, of course, we'll be shortly back and talking with the sports guys. So at this point, however, let's see what else is happening in the news this week, legal news. Not significant. There was certainly a civil rights case that was approved for publication, and that was under the was a civil suit under the New Jersey Civil Rights Act, and it was to redress injuries arising out of a warrantless entry state police detectives made into the plaintiff's home. In this case, the plaintiff was Denise Brown, and in order to secure the apartment while they sought a search warrant for the premises. And so the jury returned a verdict for the defendants, and the judge denied the plaintiff's motion for judgment, notwithstanding the verdict. And that's something that we'll talk about in the future. In other words, there are times where a court will, in fact, do that. And I'm just trying to find something here about that case. In any event, when there's a motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict, that is not used often, but it can be. Because in this case, the jury returned a verdict for the defendants. And so then the plaintiffs in that case did make the motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. And this was denied. And it was denied both ways. So the plaintiff in that case, she appealed from the denial of her motion. And she said that she was entitled to judgment and that the injunction, because it is indispensable, indisputable, because of that, the state police seized and entered her residence without a search warrant and without consent or any circumstances that would warrant such action. So the outcome, however, and this was Brown versus State et al.,
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disattel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Well, just to wrap up the program in the Brown case, the civil rights case, the court, and that was the appellate division, affirmed the denial of the motion as to the state with respect to judgment, and as well as reverse the denial of an injunction. because the state is immune from suit under the Civil Rights Act. However, the court reversed the denial of the motion as to the individually named detectives, and I guess it was just one detective, and remanded the case for trial on damages because the trooper's testimony established indisputably that their entry into the plaintiff's residence, well, I shouldn't say, should, the defendant's residence, who filed the appeal, they did that prior to securing a warrant, and that was unlawful as a matter of law. So that was a decision that people just can't, or I should say, the police can't just come popping in and breaking down doors, not in this state, because there are many, many cases with respect to those issues. And there are many decisions, and our courts are have been fairly consistent, actually very consistent. So I will just turn on the news. Let's hear what's happening. And then we'll be back with the sports guys.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. The girl known as Baby Doe, who in June was found dead wrapped in a trash bag on a rocky shoreline in Boston Harbor, has been identified by investigators. A suspect was taken into custody in connection with the case after a search warrant was executed in a nearby neighborhood on Thursday. The man being questioned by police is the boyfriend of the mother of Baby Doe. Meanwhile, a neighbor says Baby Doe's mother is messed up.
I would not let anything happen to my kids. I don't care if I'm a fiend, like, if I couldn't take care of her, I would have given it to a family member or something.
Police on Mackinac Island, Michigan, said Friday they are investigating allegations of a bar fight between top aides for Republican presidential contenders Rand Paul and Marco Rubio. John Yab, a Paul aide, alleged in a Facebook post that Rubio campaign manager Rich Beeson hit him at a bar on Mackinac Island, where a number of Republican candidates have gathered for the weekend. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
This week on Geico's Stuff Found in Your Car, we look inside your rear door pocket.
Oh, hey. Yeah, me, the almond. Possibly one of the healthiest snacks, just rolling around in the crumbs of inferior foods. You were too busy to save me, but are you too busy to switch your car insurance to Geico where you could save hundreds of dollars in just 15 minutes? Probably not. Saving money with Geico is awesome. Almonds, on the other hand, are just a superfood. No big deal.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com today.
Welcome to Staples.
Hi, Staples guy. My office computers are running really slow. Do you...
Staples has the latest Windows 10 devices. They're lightning fast.
But I want...
A great deal? Right now, get up to $250 off select laptops, desktops, and 2-in-1 PCs with Windows 10.
Wow, and do you have plans?
No, actually, I'm free.
I meant tech service plans.
Yes, we do, and I'm still free.
Get more tech for up to $250 less. Staples. Make more happen.
Offer ends 9/26, valid in-store and online while supplies last.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is under fire for his handling of a question at a town hall meeting about when the U.S. can get rid of Muslims. The questioner went on to make an assertion that President Obama is Muslim. Trump appeared to take issue with none of the points raised by the questioner. Steve Nanus reports.
Donald Trump is facing growing calls to apologize for the way he handled this question at a town hall meeting in New Hampshire.
We have a problem in this country. It's called Muslims. We know our current president is one. Right. You know he's not even an American.
We need this first question.
Certificate, man. But anyway, we have training camps growing where they want to kill us. Mm-hmm. That's my question.
You know, a lot of people are saying that, and a lot of people are saying that bad things are happening out there. We're going to be looking at that and plenty of other things.
Democrats pounced.
He knew, or he should have known, that what that man was asking was way out of bounds, untrue.
For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
Republican presidential candidate and current Ohio Governor John Kasich tried to commend Latinos at a speech on Thursday. but it seems his thoughts got a little tangled when he starts talking about tipping the hotel maid instead.
I look at our friends in the Latino community as people that ought to be voting Republican. I mean, they're very strong